All right, this is just Mike getting ready to start the podcast. Just want to give you guys a quick update before we start. We've got one of the three children getting sick in the bathroom. The other one wants to play a round of Pokemon with me. We've got the youngest, who is currently cuddling up with Dad. We haven't gotten started with the podcast just yet, but I got to tell you, folks, this is what it's all about.
Prepare for trouble.
Make it double.
To protect the world from devastation.
And unite all people within our nation.
Announce the evils of truth and love.
And extend their reach in the stars above.
Jesse.
James.
Team Rocket, blast off of the speed of light.
Surrender now or prepare to fight. That's right.
Well, welcome back to the Why We Stayed podcast. You guys picked an incredible episode to tune into because this is the first podcast where I'm actually looking into the eyeballs of the people that I am interviewing. And yes, folks, I said people, which means that there are multiple people on the podcast. And so I just want to, without further ado, I just want to welcome to the podcast my family, my friends. I almost said my lovers, which is strange. My family, John and Jen Chapel.
So good to be here. It's an honor.
Yes, we're very excited. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for letting me just come to your house and sit in your kitchen.
Should we tell them it's round two?
Yeah, actually, great point, John. We tried to shoot the podcast, must have been 2 weeks ago, almost a month ago at this point. And when we arrived, basically what happened was there was, you guys have three kids, and one of your kids, actually two of your children were throwing up. I think maybe a day later you got sick, John.
Yes, that night.
And then maybe days later I got sick and had what I would call on or off the podcast explosive diarrhea.
Yes.
And it was just a really tough.
You're better now, though.
Much better now. And so anyway, if you're still tuned in, thank you. But for those that don't know John and Jen, and maybe you don't know much about their story, I just want you to share a little bit about kind of when you guys first met, how long have you guys been together, all that fun stuff.
So we've been married for 11 years.
11 years.
11 years. And we dated not too long. We went to college together at Elam Bible Institute. You've never heard of it. Don't even try to look it up because you'll never find it. It's in Lima, New York. And we were basically went to Bible college together. We were not friends. And I happened to be living in Myrtle Beach. Jen, through a mutual friends, moved down there. And we were just hanging out. And I took a job back in Virginia. And we had been friends for years and years and years. And we kind of, started liking each other. Got married soon after that. So
really important part, though, that I'm curious about, who kind of initiated? Like, was it like a Facebook message from John? Was it like...
There was no Facebook.
Okay, sorry. Mike, sorry.
Yeah, this is a different day.
All right, fair. Was it like you guys were just hanging out at Bible college and you were like, hey, like, have you been reading?
No, let me answer this one. Yeah, actually, we were best friends for a while. I would be sitting on his couch eating ice cream and he'd be going out on dates. I'd be in sweatpants and he'd be going out on dates with other girls because we were just good friends. And then one day we went mini golfing together and he was telling me about how he was going out with another girl and I got super jealous and mad. So I guess that's kind of what started it. Yeah.
So you fell in love with me first.
No.
Wow. So it all started at mini golf.
Who won that game, Jen?
I'm sure me.
So Jen seems to have won that game. That's amazing. Good. Now, one of the things as well that I don't know if people know fully from your story, but I'm sure some people are listening that do, you guys were involved in youth ministry for a number of years, but then you guys had decided to actually do what very few people even attempt to do, and that's you guys decided to actually launch a church here in Rochester, New York. What was that decision-making process like? What did that look like? Again, for someone that may be listening that is involved in youth ministry or maybe they're involved at the church and they kind of have that itch to want to start a church, what did that kind of decision look like when you guys decided to do that?
We were very happy living in Virginia Beach. We had an amazing church there and we're very happy. And we had our first son, Judah, who's 8 years old now. And at the time, my family was not living there. And the church was it's part of a youth ministry we've been a part of for about 5 years. And it was the most amazing experience of my life. We were like, I can only just describe it as we were family. And I remember sitting at this meeting and I was basically about to take over the college ministry and different things. And I had this just I knew that it was at this time not necessarily a church plant, but to move to Rochester, and I didn't know what that looked like, and it was probably the scariest thing I've ever done because I was very happy, Jim was very happy, but we knew we wanted to be near family with our kids, so that was kind of our first step. That was I guess our first transition.
Yeah, but who wants to leave Virginia Beach to come back to snowy Rochester?
Now, one of the things that again, as I'm considering the people that may be listening to this, I think as you're describing kind of that decision, like you left from this place of what I would call comfort,
and it's a great place
that you really felt like you guys were in this place of comfort, and then you decided, hey, we're going to make a faith move. Now, as you guys were in the process of making this faith move, and this is probably where we'll pivot the kind of the remainder of the podcast, but as you guys kind of made that faith move, things were steadily going well. Things were growing. I know Alicia and I had a chance to come and enjoy a worship night and a couple of services with you guys. But really, as you guys were starting to kind of build and grow this church, you were continuing to grow your family. You had had your second child, Brooklyn, and you guys were continuing to grow your family, and then tragedy struck. And where I really wanted to kind of share this story is, and I know this is a significant open question, but can you guys kind of share the beginning process of Cooper's story?
Sure. Yeah, we, as Mike said, we had already had two kids. We had our son, Judah, he's 8 now, in Brooklyn, who's 6 now, and we knew we wanted to have another baby, and we were in the midst. We had already planted the church, so the church was already, you know, going and growing and doing well, and we decided we wanted to have another baby. It happened very, very quickly. I mean, it happened quickly, meaning we got pregnant very quickly.
Nice job, John.
Yeah. I had very easy textbook pregnancies with my first two kids, and this pregnancy was definitely the same up until about when I was 8 months pregnant, and I had like a slight complication. It's a long fancy word. It's called polyhydramnios, but it just means you have too much amniotic fluid. And basically, the doctors just told me everything is fine. It's not a big deal. We're just going to monitor you a little bit more. And that's what they did. We just got monitored a little bit more and everything was good. We had, you know, the room ready and the diaper bag packed and the car seats installed. And what happened was I was at a doctor's appointment getting ready to get induced, and I was signing paperwork, and we watched as right in front of our eyes, there was my son's heartbeat was there and it was strong, and then watched a minute later and it was gone. So it was actually very, very crazy. I mean, the doctor was baffled, and she tried to rush me to the hospital to see if we could get him out in time, and it just the hospital was too far away. It wasn't possible. And once I got there, they confirmed that he had passed away. I think, you know, there's a thing about stillbirth. If you hear this is classified as stillbirth, and what a lot of people might not know is, like, you think a stillbirth, you know the baby was already dead, so it's not a big deal. It's not true at all. Like, after you get to the hospital, you have to go through labor, you have to give birth, you hold your baby, you name your baby, you have a funeral, and it's actually, you know, he was a 9-pound baby, so he was just, you know, as much of a baby as any of my other kids. So I think that's, you know, kind of a common thing where people just think it's, you know, an easy thing to get over, and it was very hard for us.
So when everything happened, and we're going to get into some other things, I think, you know, why we stayed in some faith things, but the church, I couldn't think about sermons, obviously. I couldn't think about scheduling. I couldn't think about worship team. I couldn't think about to be able to let go of something like that and just be able to say, I literally can't handle it. And the church was still there when we came back. And that was a powerful thing. And that's where church kind of is family. And it was a huge benefit to us through this whole process that we'll get into.
And how would you guys say, because again, when I hear this story, like, my wife and I haven't had kids yet. We don't even know what that process looks like. I can imagine going through a 9-month journey, having, you know, sat in a hospital room. You've already had two successful pregnancies. Like, you guys are going, and I mean, I'm sure no parents feel like they have it down, but you guys had done this before. Like, you've done the process, you went to the doctor's appointments, you did the thing. Like, obviously no one expects that that's going to happen. And I guess my question is, you know, for maybe someone that's listening that has gone through a miscarriage, or someone that's listening who has gone all the way to a stillbirth, man, how in the world have you guys been able to keep your faith? And what would you say to maybe someone that has also gone through that process? How do you keep your faith in the midst of such a devastating thing?
I would say it's not easy. And for me personally, I grew up in a Christian home. I was very involved in church my whole life. I served on the worship team. I was always in church when I was younger. So I think for me, there were things that were like taught to me early on that were just kind of in there, that were like ingrained in my head almost, like the ways I felt about God and Bible verses, and just all these things were kind of just deposited in me in an early age. And then I was lucky enough to not have any kind of life-altering tragedy like this. You know, I this was in my 30s, so I was lucky to not have experienced anything like that until this point, where my faith had really been tested. And all these things were, like I said, they were put in me, and I just kind of, it kind of came out when I was, when my faith was tested. So I actually have a thought about this, a story. When after we got sent home from the hospital, okay, so no one really knew besides our immediate family, like you knew, but no one had known what was happening. Like, no one knew what would happen. I was getting texts from friends, you know, did your baby arrive yet? Are you having contractions? Nobody knew what happened. So we had to go to the funeral home. We had to plan a funeral. And then we came home and we were going to have a funeral in 2 days. And I said, well, none of my friends know. None of my coworkers know. Nobody knows what happened. I'm getting to a point. Don't worry. But so nobody knew what happened, and I knew that I had to tell people, and I just didn't have the heart to individually call or text people because that was just too much to process. So I made a Facebook post, and I said in my Facebook post, I just said, you know, our son was born, he passed away, and I think I left out earlier, but he had an umbilical cord knot. That was the reason. I often leave the reason out on accident, but... so I made this post and I said, we're having a funeral for him. We'd like to invite everyone. And at the end of the post, I wrote, as hard as this is, we still believe God is faithful and he'll be the only thing to get us through. And I wrote that when I was just a zombie. I didn't even know what I was saying at that point. And I believe that, you know, I wrote that because that's what was in my heart. That's what I believe. That's what was, you know, what I really believe. So if, you know, as the years went on, I kind of did question God, and I didn't understand how this could happen and how I could trust him and why this would happen. And I would often go back and read that I wrote, you know, 2 days after my son died, that God is faithful. You know, I wrote the same day we picked out a casket that God is faithful and he's going to get us through. And that just, it served as a reminder to me that even if I don't feel like this, even if I don't like understand why God is faithful, I believed it then and I'm going to choose to believe it now.
And so for me, it was a very difficult time. Jen handled it a lot differently. She was going to counseling and going to these women's groups. And some guys, that's fine. That, you know, they go talk about it, whatever. But I even didn't talk about it with my best friends. I didn't want to talk to anybody, and just really shut down for a long time. And I don't know, Jenny can, but probably at least a year where I was very depressed on medication and wasn't myself. It was very, very difficult. So it's not, you know, if you have gone through, you know, you can right now when I'm saying this, you know what has happened in your life that maybe you feel like has derailed you. It's kind of taking you off track, and here I am thinking my whole life this is all I want to ever do is be a pastor, and I'm working at a sales job right now, you know, and in that God has a plan. And I would say kind of the question for us is, how have you been able to remain faithful? I remember Jen and I would have these discussions and we would talk about this and kind of, you know, why has this happened to, and it's, you know, God sees us all the same. You know, sometimes we think somehow that this isn't supposed to happen to us because, you know, you fill in the blank. We go to church or we're faithful or we tithe or you know, my mom has been to church forever. Again, you fill in the blank. And the reality is that God died on the cross for every single one of us. Those people that we kind of in our, even in our prejudice, we view as maybe less or in the back of our head, we think maybe, well, why did, you know, I would think, well, why did they have a baby? They didn't even eat right or you know, again, whatever. God is faithful and he's faithful in that dark time that we all go through at some point, I think in our lives. And it's just can be just such a dark time and very difficult, but he is faithful.
Thank you guys for sharing that. I think it's one thing to be driving in your car and listening to a podcast and you hear someone share a story. It's another thing to actually live out that story. And so for you guys to share that, I just certainly appreciate your guys' willingness to do that. And as you were talking, I think for the first time, and I, you know, please hear my heart, I'm certainly not comparing the two, but for the first time, I just like saw that there were actually two deaths that happened, right? There was the death of a dream in a church. And there was a death of a child, and it took place at the same time. And I think, you know, the difficulty, of course, is, of course, all of the focus and all of the energy should be on the child, and it was. But there is also that very deep place of calling and anointing and favor that is on both of your lives that, you know, there was almost this window of that needed to be, like, laid down so that you guys could really open up this you know, this opportunity to grieve. And, you know, I just, again, I think as we're talking, I just getting goosebumps thinking about it, talking about it, because I know that God didn't bring you to that place of grieving just for that to be the final chapter of the story. And what I love and, you know, what I'd love to kind of jump to as well is you guys, shortly after Cooper went to heaven, you guys decided to try for another child. And again, as we've already discussed, John is very good at that. But you know, maybe for someone listening that maybe has like this insane fear of trying again after something like that, how did you guys overcome that fear, and how did you guys really feel like it was worth kind of giving it another go?
Yeah, so we decided we did have another baby after Cooper, and. For me, I knew early on that it was going to be a very long grieving process for Cooper. I just knew that. And I knew that, like John said, I wanted to get into counseling and I wanted to take like all the steps I could to make my, you know, to try to remain as healthy as possible during that grieving period. And I have a lot of lost friends and everyone is different. But for me, I never wanted to just have another baby to have a baby. I don't know. There's no replacement. So when something like this happens, when you lose a baby full term, everybody just wants a happy ending. They want to take the pain away. And the way that, you know, people think you could do that is just by having another baby. It doesn't work like that. And if you lose your mom, you know, people don't say have another mom. Or if I lost my 8-year-old, I can't just go pick up another 8-year-old. So to me, it's the same exact thing. Another baby would never replace the son that we lost. He was a different person. You know, but so we didn't even talk about having a baby, honestly, for a year. We really didn't. We didn't talk about it. We just grieved Cooper. We talked about him. We remembered it. We tried to get through it as best as we could. And then I remember after his first birthday party was the first time we talked about it. And, then it happened very quickly after that. So, I would love to say that I was very calm and, trusted in God during the pregnancy, and that was not exactly true.
Yeah.
I think that there were days where I definitely felt God's peace. I definitely did. And then there were other days where I just was, it was a nightmare. So it was a little bit of both. And I got, you know, monitored a lot, and I had really good care, and I had really good family surrounding me and very good friends that I could talk to when I was stressed out. And yeah, we ended up having our daughter. Her name is Parker, and Parker Grace. And I will say this, though she's not a replacement, she is definitely, it's a whole different ballgame when you have a baby after you've lost a baby. It's caused me to just parent completely differently. Okay. So it's your whole outlook on everything has changed. If I'm ever tired, like, you won't hear me complain. If she's teething, you won't hear me complain. If you, you know, like last, when you came over, there's kids puking, it's fine by me, because it's a privilege that I get to take care of these kids. It really is. It's a privilege, and there's nothing I would rather do.
That's incredible that you guys were able to, again, take that grief, process that grief, and then you were able to say, you know, we're going to not try to find a replacement, but we are going to choose to have another child. I think that's incredible. And for those that are listening that have suffered extreme loss, and maybe they haven't suffered the loss of a child, but maybe they've lost a parent, or they've lost a sibling, or they've lost a friend, or maybe someone that appeared to be a parent, or whatever it was, what advice would you give them when it comes to remaining in faith, remaining hopeful that God is still good despite some of these things that happen?
First off, it's not going to be easy, as you probably already know. It's not going to be, you know, just you know, some 3-step program or anything like that. I love what my wife handled things a little bit differently, and I remember she kind of hinted at this a little bit, but she would always say to me, John, I'm doing all this stuff because if I end up being messed up for the rest of my life, I want to know that I did everything I could, and I tried to get as much help as I could, because I felt, she at the time, we felt like we were going crazy, you know. It makes you look at life a little bit different. Maybe you understand this, but when you have something that's a worst case scenario happen in your life, everything is a worst case scenario. It's your kid getting off the bus, when they're swimming in the swimming pool, and you think, you just look at life a little bit different, and you really got to allow God to help you, because it's one of those things that you just look at things at different lens. But yeah. I want to say, you know, if you're dealing with loss, and I haven't preached in a couple of years, but I want to encourage you. I want to just kind of let you know that it's kind of like what the Bible says. It says the righteous gets back up. You know, for me, the biggest thing was I disconnected from everybody, my best friends. I disconnected from, you know, I was there present, you know, with people, but I really was disconnected, the only word I can describe. And so my wife kind of had a different, and maybe that's you, and she can talk to you, you know, kind of through the podcast and encourage you to continue to get help and support and that thing. And I think church is so powerful if you're in a good place, because it keeps you connected, and it can keep you, if we give you an example right now, you know, I'm not pastoring a church, I'm not leading a church, but, you know, we have found a church that we go to small group every Tuesday night, and when we can't make it on Sunday, we go, but we're in a small group with, you know, parent, you know, people that are our age with kids, and it's been so amazing for us. And so the tendency is you want to pull back. Tendency is we want to kind of give up. And that's why that Bible verse will mean more to you when it says the righteous get back up. You know, we're all going to fall. We're all going to have things that happen to us that have nothing to do with, you know, sometimes we do things that we, you know, kind of make things happen to us. But other things, just bad things happen to good people. And it happens. And I'm sorry if something like this has happened to you. But the Bible would just want to speak to you to get back up and to not give up and to really try to not let yourself pull back and be disconnected. And that might be a season where you're disconnected and you can't help it. And that's okay. And be encouraged to get back up.
Now, I think one of the unique things that you guys have been able to do as well is not only have you guys, you know, chosen to re-engage back in faith and chosen to re-engage back in the community, but obviously there was this desire to help other parents that were going through what you guys went through. And not only does Cooper continue to live on, but you guys have created the Cooper Project in his honor, and I'd love for you to just share a little bit about that and how people can get involved with the Cooper Project.
I just want to say real quick that this is 100% my wife. She is the most amazing, incredible human being in the entire planet. I had nothing to do with it, and she is absolutely incredible. And so listen to this story. Listen to what she's doing, and you could please donate or give or buy a necklace when you talk about it, because it's incredible what she does.
Well, that was sweet. I told you on the golf course he was interested first.
That's not how it went. No.
No, so the Cooper Project was started shortly after It's basically just an organization where it's kind of funny, but I make memorial jewelry and for moms who have lost children. So it's basically a necklace with their baby's name on it. And all the hospitals, the local hospitals here in Rochester have cards that they're able to give to moms that lose babies right in the hospital, and that gives them instructions on how to contact me. And there's, you know, social workers that call me, and there's nurses that text me, and they just let me know if there's a loss. And basically it's not, you know, a necklace seems like not a big deal, but it's a tangible something with their baby's name. So for me, I am typically wearing a Cooper necklace at all times, and I found that a lot of other moms were doing the same. So the Cooper Project exists just to make necklaces for free for local lost moms, and it has even expanded to all over the United States. When I'm able to, I open up an order form so moms from all over the U.S. can order as well.
That's incredible. Jen, just maybe off the top of your head, how many necklaces approximately would you say that you have donated and given away?
Approximately, I think we're over about 600 now. So about 600 free necklaces. And I have, I also have an Etsy shop where people can purchase the necklaces, and then the percentage goes towards the free necklaces.
That is incredible. And I secretly hope that you guys can hear Baby Parker in the background, because it's just a perfect end to an incredible night. And John and Jen, I just want to thank you guys for being open and just sharing a little bit about a story that, there's Parker. It's amazing. But thank you guys for sharing your story. And man, if you guys don't know them, if you guys, you know, if they're not in your life, man, follow them on Instagram. Look up the Cooper Project. I know that you would be blessed just to support people like them. So thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. And we will see you guys next time.
Hey, Brooklyn.
I know it might be crazy, but did you hear the story? I think I heard a big leg girl and a zombie. Oh, tell me more, boy. Sounds like a fantasy. Oh, what could go so wrong with a girl and a zombie? You're from the perfect paradise, and I'm living on the darker side.